You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. So happy to have all of you along this afternoon. We're going to have an interesting and hopefully entertaining program for you this afternoon. We got a couple of great guests. We've got Congressional Representative Barbara Lee from California is going to be on in the second hour. And the first hour, we're going to have Rick Perlstein from OurFuture.org. Rick, a great writer and always a good interview, so we look forward to having him on with us today. Thanks for joining us. My goodness, did we have problems yesterday? Ah, yes. In the building where we have our studio here, a water pipe broke next door, and, water everywhere. And there was a water, there was a drop to drink, but floors, walls, oh my. Oh my. I thought I saw Noah's Ark going by for a moment. Never have seen a place get flooded like that, personally. But anyway, we're back today, and dry. Got the, some of the water, yes, some of the water did come into this side of the building, and so we have... wet floor and carpet and all that kind of mess. Big, 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 big mess. I understand, to tell you what a little faucet can do, they had a faucet break over there, and the insurance adjusters were there this morning and said they did somewhere around $50,000 worth of damage to the building. The drywall, the floors, the contents. Oh, what a mess. Anyway, we're here. We're dry. We're ready to go. This just in, if you live in Florida, and what wonderful news this is. The Florida lawmakers, in their infinite wisdom, and they are wise, you know, because it's a Republican stronghold down here, they passed a law today that will allow you to bring your gun to work. Yes, you can. You can bring your gun for self-protection. You can bring it to work with you. You got to keep it out in your car. But before that, you couldn't do that. So everybody, it's comforting for me to know that all the psychos that are in Florida can now carry guns in their cars. And have them right outside, so if they get pissed off and don't like the way their day's going at work, they just go out and get the gun, come in and shoot ya. Yes, and what was that clown? One of the Florida representatives said it. The second thing they wrote about it in the Constitution was the right to bear arms. Representative from Crestview, Florida, said it was what was dear in their hearts. So. Congratulations, all my fellow Floridians. Get your guns. You can put them in your car. You can carry them all around Florida with you now. You can take them to work. Good news, I know. God forbid you got anybody riding on American Airlines today. What? 1,000 canceled flights? 1,000 canceled flights, did they say? Oh, my, oh, my. Wow. And I see somebody called me a while ago and wanted to know if I knew the rest of the story. I don't. I don't know how long Randy Rhodes is suspended for, so there you have my answer rather than send an email. I do not know. I did read one interesting thing that Randy said that she knew some dirt on the Clintons that the rest of us don't know. Give me a break. Give me a break. that's just plain ridiculous. Come on, Randy. Come on. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program. I see oil hit $112 a barrel today. Oh, my, that's such good news for us. Filling up your gas tank's going to cost you even more now. It's down to $110.85 right now. Let's see, where's gold at today? $938. It's up $20. So, and I think the market's down 87 points. So there you have the financial news for the day. My goodness. You've been watching, did you watch any of the hearings? Did you? I did, and we're gonna talk about it throughout the program today. As I watched those hearings yesterday, I got the distinct impression that it all comes down to who wants to fight and who doesn't want to fight. I mean, there are people, let's face it, people just love to fight. You've heard how John McCain's been going around the country lately bragging how his family just loves to fight because they've been admirals and blah, blah, blah all along. And that's fine. We need people in the military. And I do honor their service. But I did. I got the distinct impression that from watching the Republicans, your Lindsey Grahams and kind of people yesterday, it just seems to me that the Republicans want to fight in Iraq. They want to have the war spill over into Iran and the surrounding region. And some get it honest. Some of them have served, like I said, in the military. But many, if not most, have not. But then they go around boasting about being tough and willing to fight anyway. And I vehemently disagree with John Sidney McCain politically. And I think he's absolutely wrong on this Bush war. But at least he has tasted battle. And at least he personally has the stomach for it. But you've got your Kagan family, and I know you all know who they are. They're one of the groups of architects of this war. Your Doug Feith, and you saw probably that embarrassing 60 Minutes interview of his. I wanted to reach through the TV and yank him through there. Your Paul Wolfowitz's, your Lindsey Graham's, your Joe Lieberman's, your Dick Cheney's. You got all these chicken hawks that demanded somebody else's family go fight the war that now 81% of the American people see as a mistake. And I find it astonishing that 81% of Americans are against the Bush war, and yet politicians are still debating whether or not we should continue on over there. It's as though almost all of the politicians are giving us this Dick Cheney answer of, so? They really don't give a damn what we think. How many of more of our kids should we send off to battle, a battle with no obvious end in sight? How many more do we send to get killed, to get injured, maybe maimed for the rest of their lives? 30,000 injured so far. I go to Washington, D.C. 3 or 4 times a year, and every time I go there, I walk over to the war memorials, over to the mall. I feel drawn to that, and we've got the new World War II memorial. It's very impressive, and it does give one a sense of the awesome numbers of dead and wounded and sacrificed during that war. And it also gives one a sense of just how important to the welfare of this country our involvement in that war actually was. And we literally did participate in saving the world from tyranny. Then you walk a little further down the mall, down toward the Lincoln Memorial end, and you come to the Vietnam Memorial. And you can't see it until you're actually almost upon it. And it just points out to me the senselessness of our involvement in Vietnam. The names on that wall, it points out that something like 58,000 Americans died there for absolutely nothing. And I would contend that those 58,000 were victims of the same kinds of men as are those I mentioned a moment ago, the Cheneys, the Kagans, the Wolfowitzes, and the like. And then you see the Korean War Memorial, which is the most haunting to me because of the lifelike faces of the statues of the soldiers and the looks on their faces. The looks of exhaustion and fear, dazed by the horrors of another war. And every time I go down and walk by those memorials, it makes me wonder if the soldiers who have lost their lives in Iraq won't become just footnotes in our history, in the sands of time. Another war we shouldn't have been involved in. Another war that was wanted by those who like to show the American people how tough they are. Men who mostly would never march into battle, but who are very willing to send another's family in to do their fighting for them. Visiting these memorials also reminds me of the horrors of war, the senselessness of many of them, and serves to remind me constantly that to stay aware of the losses we're now suffering in another bloody conflict. God knows our media certainly isn't doing a decent job of keeping us apprised and aware of the terrible sacrifices being made over there as a result of Bush's absolutely immoral action of invading Iraq. How much of the war have you seen on the news lately? There's been terrible carnage of American life over there lately and innocent Iraqi lives. How much have you seen it on the news, on the evening news? Do the cameras take us to the battlefield and show us men and women who've been freshly slaughtered by a nameless, faceless enemy? Do the cameras show us soldiers with their arms and legs blown off? Do they show us the flag-draped caskets returning to Dover? Do they even their Washington bureaus? Do they even go to Walter Reed Hospital and show us if there's been any improvements in how our wounded are being cared for there after that scandal? No, they'd rather talk about Barack Obama's minister or Chelsea Clinton being asked about Monica Lewinsky. That's far more important. Far more important. It just sickens me. Does the news media do many stories on the psychological scars of our soldiers? The scars that they're suffering? The massive suicide that we've been talking about not lately? The numbers of our military personnel being reported? They come home with addictions, the alcoholism, their family problems, their financial problems they face? The answer is no. The press would rather tell us about General Petraeus telling fairy tales in front of the Senate committee or Obama's bowling score. And frankly, I'm ashamed of how the media has absolutely just totally, what's the word, abrogated, I guess, their responsibility to the American public. You got the VA. I believe the figure is somewhere around 20% of the soldiers coming home from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars have been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. They've got a backlog of something like 300,000 or 400,000 disability claims. It's sobering. It's ugly, and evidently it's too ugly to show the American public. The press is not doing their job. They haven't come close to doing their job in the war in Iraq. Haven't come close. I'm sure most of you watched the hearings yesterday. If you didn't, you've certainly heard all about it. Fragile and reversible. Those are the words used. Fragile and reversible. That's a sound of confidence, isn't it? But I think if you wanted to sum up the entire day, if you wanted to encapsulate the entire day and put it down to just one short period of time during those hearings that went on for God knows how long, well into the evening, if you had to watch only one part of it, you probably wanted to watch Joe Biden's questions yesterday. And for my money, I think Joe Biden blew the whole hearing wide open with his statement and his question to Crocker. He put the administration into a checkmate situation and made them all look like liars and fools, in my opinion. I knew it was coming. I knew one of the senators would ask the question, and I suspected it would be either Chris Dodd or Joe Biden. And sure enough, Joe Biden took the initiative and asked Crocker whether it would be better for the American national security interest to eliminate al-Qaeda in Iraq or to eliminate al-Qaeda along the Pakistan-Afghani border. And Crocker, Ambassador Crocker, sat there for a minute and didn't know what to say. He was looking for a place to hide. And finding none, he had to fess up. And in my opinion, totally humiliate the Bush administration. That is, if humiliation is something this bunch can actually feel. And answer, I would therefore pick al-Qaeda on the Afghan-Pakistani border. Checkmate, baby. Checkmate. When he said that, they should have just pounded the gavel and said, that's all we needed to know. We don't need any more of your BS, Crocker. We don't need any more of your BS, General Petraeus. We know you're here as sycophants for the administration. We know you've come to toot their horn and tell us how great this is. But Biden's question and Biden asking Crocker that made Crocker answer the question that is it more important to defeat Al-Qaeda in Iraq or Afghanistan? And he admitted the truth that it's more important on the Afghani-Pakistani border. That's the end of it. Biden's question forced an answer that blasted every single argument for the Iraqi occupation by the Bush administration right out of the water. Crocker admitted that we're fighting the wrong war. He admitted that Afghanistan poses a far greater threat from Al-Qaeda. And he acknowledged that the chances of Al-Qaeda establishing a huge force in Iraq is insignificant next to their established presence on the Afghani-Pakistani border. He was admitting that we're wasting lives and treasure in the wrong place, something we, most of us, have known all along. For my money, the hearings are no longer relevant after Biden's question. We know that lives are being lost in vain every single day. We know that billions of dollars in borrowed money are being spent in the wrong place. We know that Iraq was never the place for our military presence. And we know that it doesn't matter whether al-Sadr or Maliki make peace or fight to the death. It will have nothing to do with the outcome of Bush's so-called war on terror because we're fighting in the wrong place. It's as if after Pearl Harbor, we would have attacked China. Bush is allowing the real culprits of 9/11 to escape in order to continue on with his ill-conceived, stubborn misadventure in Iraq, and it's absolutely criminal. Fragile and reversible. Sitting there, and certainly I don't mean any disrespect to the military, but sitting there with all of his medals, all of his ribbons, all of his stars, awards, all that, a chest full of all that. We had a military man sitting there yesterday telling us what our national policy is going to be in Iraq. And it just seems to me that the American public is being given the wrong idea that we do not have a military that is that decides about the war. They decide about the tactics and the strategies of war. They do not decide whether we should be in the war. And that's exactly what Bush sent Petraeus up there to do yesterday, is to snow the American public one more time. And have the guy sitting there with all his medals and his full dress uniform on, representing not the American people, representing not the soldiers in Iraq, but representing George W. Bush. And that's all it was about. And it was a pitiful performance. Fragile and reversible. I was frankly disgusted by the whole thing. It wasn't a whole lot different than I thought it would be. There weren't very many surprises. They mostly repeated their testimonies from last September. Talked about how political reconciliation is happening slowly. You can bet on that. It is happening slowly, if at all. Frankly, don't see it happening at all. How embarrassing it must have been for him to admit that he counseled Maliki on this ill-advised trip into Basra. And Maliki pretty much told him, hey, shove it, pal, I'm going to go ahead and do what I want. And then, had to call for help. Okay, fine. Maliki, you want to run your country? You want to run your military? Run it. We're going home. Petraeus gave him advice. He pretty much told Petraeus to stick it. He was going to do it his way. He ended up getting embarrassed. He ended up having Mutaka al-Sadr hand him his hat. Ended up having over 1,000 of the Iraqi soldiers desert or refuse to fight, including some officers. It was a debacle. And Maliki ended up having to send an emissary to negotiate a ceasefire and to release some prisoners. This is progress. This is what our American military has been doing, having to train these people. This is progress. And the irony of the situation was, there sat Petraeus and Crocker yesterday giving their testimony, all the while we know that hundreds of Iraqis were fleeing Baghdad once again, with intense fighting going on, and there these two are. Well, you know, we're making progress. Was it Teddy Kennedy yesterday, I believe, said, and I'll mangle how he said it, but I think he said a year ago the president said we couldn't withdraw because there was too much violence. And now he says we can't afford to withdraw because violence is down. I couldn't take too much of that sort of thing for those hearings yesterday. I was so PO'd by the end of it, I didn't know what to do. And it wasn't just me. Even some of the conservative senators were very dissatisfied. Ask George Voinovich how he feels about it today. He suggested that Syria and Saudi Arabia and Egypt need to be told, hey guys, we're on our way out. Chuck Hagel said the same. Freshman Senator, what's his name? Corker from Tennessee. Wanted to know what the end of it's going to look like. Never did get an answer for that, did we? No, we didn't. Have no idea what the end game of this is. Not a clue. We're going to pause for a break, and we'll be back with our guest in just a couple of minutes.
Out on the racetrack, a professional driver knows he's surrounded by other pro drivers.
NASCAR legend and racing champion Rusty Wallace.
When you drive a truck for a living, the only professional around might be you. All the more reason to buckle up every trip, every time. Because out on the highway, trouble can come from anywhere, and it can happen in a heartbeat. If you're ever in a crash, the smartest and the safest place for a trucker to be is behind the wheel, secure, and in control of your truck, looking out for yourself and everybody around you. Without your safety belt, you could easily get bumped out of position, and that means out of control. Trust me, that's not good on the racetrack, and it's not good on the highway. So be ready, be buckled. Remember, you're the professional, the one who drives for a living.
A public service message from the U.S. Department of Transportation.
There, Rangers. When you mosey into Rick's place, you never know what you're going to get.
I had a conversation with one of my right-wing Democrat friends. One thing this person told me was that I'm mean, so I'm going to try to change.
Oh, Rick, you're not mean. You're just passionate in a very spirited sort of way.
I've done it. I went through an entire show without one single insult.
Rick, we know better.
Mr. and Mrs. Republican, you are no good. You are a lying fool. You're a lying fool, a crook, a crooked crook, a babbling moron, juggling the truth, a goon, a nick and pick and whiny rat. An Uncle Sam can't do anything right. And when it comes to sex, you are also uptight. Free pig, monster, and a beast.
you're a killer.
Republican side!
Don't miss Rick's Place with Rick Goodner, part of the weekend lineup on the Horn. Running all weekend in rotation with the Sowards Report and Night Sounds.
They suck like crazy, but not in a good way. They suck!
Well, now it takes more than a robin to make the weather go through. And it takes two lips of fire to melt away the snow.
But it takes two hearts of cooking to make a fire grow. And baby, you've got what it takes.
Yeah.
You know it takes.
Tell me about it.
To make a romance sweet. Ooh, it takes a lot of loving to make my life complete.
And it takes a lot of love to knock me off my feet. And baby, you've got what it takes. Takes because it takes more than an effort to stay away from you. It takes more than a lifetime to prove that I'll be true.
But it takes somebody special to make me say I do.
Oh, yeah.
And baby, hey, you've got what it takes. Oh.
Well, evidently, I don't have what it takes. This is live radio for you, trying to get a hold of our guest, and don't know what happened. We cannot connect, so we'll wait and see if he gives us a call here pretty soon. I think he probably will, and we're waiting on Rick Perlstein, and don't know what's up with that, but anyway, we can't get him on the line right now, so we'll continue on with what we were talking about. We mentioned the hearings yesterday. I do wonder how many of you listen to them, and what do they mean to you, and do you think they were worthwhile, and do you think, most of all, we're going to have Congresswoman Barbara Lee on with us a little later on in the program, and of course we'll ask her the question, do you think Congress will do anything about the Iraq War? Can they do anything about the Iraq War? Will they stand up to George W. Bush? I understand in legal terms that this war will be absolutely illegal after January of 2009, that Congress would have to vote on it again. So we will see. I don't know. Don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if Congress will stand up to him. I don't know what they can do. I sure wish they would stand up in front of the American public at least and make some noise. I wish they'd stand up and make their position known, each and every one of them. I wish they'd all have the guts to stand there and say, the ones that feel it, and say, this is wrong. I certainly was sickened to see Lindsey Graham yesterday. And he was trying his best to set up a nice soundbite for the evening news. And he asked General Petraeus what would be the military consequences of pulling out one brigade a month, which there's been talk of, starting in January. And Petraeus didn't go along with him. He didn't take the bait, or he wouldn't take the bait. And he said, well, if conditions are good, it would be doable. So we continue to have Lindsey Graham and Joe Lieberman and John McCain, that dynamic trio. We continue to have them cheerleading for the surge. We have McCain telling us that business is very good in Iraq. Tell that to all the, 25% of the people out of a job? Not good. It's not bad, though, if you're one of the warlords. If you're one of the warlords over there, if you're one of the sheikhs, you know we're hiring many of the Sunni tribal groups to fight on our side instead of killing our soldiers. We paid them $150 million. We will this coming year to... in exchange for their cooperation with our U.S. forces. And that has helped the surge. Isn't that somewhat akin to the old story of having to tie a pork chop around your neck to get the dog to play with you, isn't it? Same thing. They have them shooting at us, and so we hoist up the white flag and say, hey, guys, I'll tell you what. Instead of shooting at us, we'll pay you some cold hard cash if you help us shoot the other guys. Yeah, fine, we'll do that. I don't know if you've seen the new article in Foreign Affairs magazine. Steve Simon on the Council of Foreign Relations pointed out that the sheikhs themselves take 20% of every one of these payments to these former insurgents, which means that commanding a couple of hundred fighters or one of these sheikhs can be worth well over $100,000 a year for a tribal chief. And believe me, $100,000 a year in Iraq is a lot of cash. So not only are the contractors getting rich, not only is Blackwater getting rich, KBR, Bechtel, General Electric, all the arms suppliers, not only are they all getting filthy rich, I mentioned Blackwater. We've got the sheikhs over there that were killing us now. They may pay us, and we won't shoot at you anymore. And so that's progress, right? That is progress. And how does it end? I was so disappointed that nobody could corner this guy that much, really. How does it end? Where will you have to be in this war? Just where will you have to be in order to say, well, that's our goal. We've done what we set out to do. We can go home now. Where is that? Does anybody know? Has he given even half an idea of where we need to be? Well, we got to have the government stable. Okay. What does that mean? Somebody define just how stable it is. Well, we've got to have it so that there's relative peace in the country. Somebody define that. What is relative peace in Iraq? I heard one Iraqi civilian today being interviewed saying instead of having one to Saddam, now they've got 50. Instead of having one tyrant that they're all afraid of now, they've got dozens of them. That's what we've done for the people of Iraq. And it was pointed out yesterday by Russ Feingold, how Paul Wolfowitz sat there and said, well, you know, we'll pay for this whole thing with the Iraqi oil. And we find out they've got something like, what, $30, $40, $50 billion in the bank, and we're shoveling in the cash. Our money, borrowed money. Where does it end? I was hoping that if nothing else, we could get some kind of a benchmark established in that hearing where we get one of those two guys or both of them to agree on something and say, hey, it'll end at XYZ. When will our patients run out? But we're making progress. We keep hearing that over and over and over again. We're making progress. We heard several of the Republicans trying to put lipstick on that pig in Iraq yesterday. Lindsey Graham, I can't stand Lindsey Graham. Can't stand him. Makes me wonder what the hell is wrong with the people in South Carolina. We had a corpse, and no disrespect intended, I guess, but we had Strom Thurmond, who was literally a corpse in the United States Senate for how many years, didn't know his own name, and the people from South Carolina elect him and sent him back, and then they follow up with Lindsey Graham. What is wrong with the people in South Carolina? And I could ask that about several states, and I have asked it about Oklahoma. How can it be that you send a clown to the United States Senate like Lindsey Graham? How can it be? Follows John McCain around like he's his servant, doesn't he? Have you noticed that lately? It's like John Sidney McCain's got himself a butler or something. A personal handyman. He just follows him around. Does he help dress him too? I don't know. But I'm really sick of seeing him. And when he got up there yesterday and tried to glorify this whole thing and tried to, you know, well, General, we're so proud of you, and I wonder if Lindsey Graham. Here we've got our armed forces in a war that they should never have been involved in the first place, dutifully following the orders that they've been giving. Many of them don't know why they're there, don't want to be there. I mean, who does want to ever be in a war? Something wrong with you if you do, I would say. But it's indefinite. And you may well say, well, all wars are indefinite, and that's true. But at least, in the First World War, we knew that once we defeated the German army, that war was over. We knew in the Second World War that once that we took Hitler down, that war was over. We knew that. When is this one over? What defines the end of this war? What satisfied these bloodthirsty, money-hungry neocons to the point where they will say, enough is enough. It's time to stop sacrificing the lives of our young men and women in uniform and bring them home. When does that time come? And what do you think if you're Osama bin Laden watching this? And if he's alive, and there are doubts about that, but whoever runs Al-Qaeda, whoever's in the leadership positions of the various cells or groups or that call themselves Al-Qaeda around the world. Osama bin Laden made the statement that they were going to bankrupt us over this. And is it working? Absolutely it's working. Think about it. They wouldn't need to fire another shot. We've got 142,000, is it, men in Iraq? No plans to pull them out? How much does it cost to keep them there? $12 billion a month? That's $144 billion a year, not counting the expenses when they come back home for medical treatment and all that. Some say by the time it's over as much as $3 trillion, and I wonder why they say by the time it's over, because who knows when it's going to be over. But for at least the period that we know about into the future, taking care of people with the VA and all the health care for the people that come back home, wounded and injured, psychologically scarred, we're talking $3 trillion so far. $3 trillion. We don't have that money. We're borrowing it. And yet, we have the Bush administration, we have General Petraeus, we have Ambassador Crocker, we have guys like Lindsey Graham and the rest of his people sitting on that panel yesterday. Well, we don't know when it's going to be over. It's going to be over when it's over. And you'll just have to trust us with that. We're no longer staring into the abyss of defeat, according to John McCain. Really? Really? Are we defeated if we're bankrupted? I would say so. Are we defeated if we have to station 142,000 men in that country till hell won't have it? I think so. That all smells like defeat to me. And don't forget, when times get troubled economically in this world, somebody is going to call for us to pay the piper, and it's China. And we owe them a lot of money. What happens if and when China says, "Hey, Uncle Sam, time to write the check, baby"? What happens then? Who won? Osama bin Laden said they would bankrupt us. I think it's working out real well, don't you think? Working out very, very well so far. Well, we're going to pause for a break. We'll be back in a minute. Do give us a call, 866-546-5254.
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I wanna be just like my president. I wanna make more money than I can spend. I wanna build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Come on, you black and Hispanic boys. We'll keep you poor so you got no choice but to join the army in your prime. We'll fight for Uncle Sam and die. And welcome to the new American century. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Welcome back. Let me be crude and insensitive for a moment. Just a moment, okay? I'm not going to join the crowd, and since I wasn't on yesterday, I'm not going to join the crowd that was commenting about Charlton Heston. Frankly, if I'm to be honest, and I am honest with you always, I didn't care that much for Charlton Heston. Never did. Didn't think he was that good of an actor. I did get a big kick out of seeing, what's his name, that guy on CNN that's Wolf Blister's sidekick. Now I can't think of his name. Telling about how when he was a kid, he couldn't wait to go see the movie The Robe because Charlton Heston was in it, and he was blah, blah, blah. Went on and on and on. Charlton Heston wasn't in The Robe. But I mostly remember Charlton Heston for standing in front of the NRA convention when he was president or whatever he was in front of the NRA, standing there with that rifle held up in the air and said, I'll give up you can have my gun when you pry it from my cold, dead fingers. Well, my cold and calloused and crude and insensitive moment of the day is, I wonder if anybody did. Charlton Heston dead at the age of 84. It's a good thing the Republicans don't have control of Congress right now because they'd probably name another airport after him. 866-546-5254. All right. Several of you have emailed me and challenged me, and you know who you are, and I won't go into it, but said that I have been riding the fence during this election. Well, I want to level with you, and I have been riding the fence in as much as I've tried my very best to be fair to both, and formerly before it was down to two, to all of our Democratic candidates for president. And I hope you understand that except for possibly Mike Gravel, I have been completely fair to all the Democratic candidates for president. I have not knocked one in favor of another. You may have noticed a bias in my tone of voice. I don't know. But I have knocked Obama. I have knocked Hillary Clinton. I have praised them both. I have great respect for them both. I was thrilled on the whole field we had this year, except for Mike Gravel. I love Dennis Kucinich, Chris Dodd, John Edwards, Joe Biden. Still don't like the fact that he went for the bankruptcy bill. But we had a great field of candidates this year. And I have been very proud of that all along. And when it finally got narrowed down to two, I was sorry to see John Edwards drop out, but when he did, and it got down to two, I feel that I've been as fair as anybody could be doing a radio program. And when it's been necessary, I've criticized both and I've praised both. And I'm to be completely frank with you, whichever the one of them ends up being our candidate, I will be pleased. I voted for Hillary Clinton in the Florida primary. I said a long time ago on this program that I wouldn't back any candidate who voted for the war or had not apologized for it. Well, sometimes you say things that you just can't follow up on. And I probably should not have said that, but I'm being honest with you. I did vote for Hillary Clinton in the Florida primary, and I would do so again. But I have been completely fair to Barack Obama. I will continue to be fair to Barack Obama all the way through this entire project. And that's just how it will remain. So you called and you challenged me on this, and I just wanted to be honest with all my listeners and let you know how I feel. And so you can't accuse me of not being honest with you. That's what I have endeavored to do. And you wanted to know how I voted. I wouldn't have had to tell you, but I did. And so there. And you will not find me jumping on a bandwagon. I think just about every broadcaster on TV, Keith Olbermann included, Rachel Maddow included, Stephanie Miller included, Randy Rhodes included, Ed Schultz included, when this whole business started, they all kind of sat back and waited until they saw how things were going to turn out. And when it looked pretty doggone likely that Barack Obama would win the nomination, then they all jumped on the let's kick Hillary in the ass campaign. That's what they did. And I would not have done that to either one of these candidates. Not a chance. And it would be easy for me to come up and tell you now, well, you know, I favored Barack Obama all along. He's been my favorite. Well, in the interest of being completely and brutally honest with you, I've told you exactly how it is and exactly how I feel. And I would not be one of these people that's jumped on the bandwagon and then participated in an absolutely obscene hate campaign toward the other. I could not do that against another Democrat. And I am shocked. I frankly am shocked and amazed at those who have. I've commented on Randy Rhodes' comments last week that they were utterly and completely out of place. Yes, we have free speech, and yes, you can say anything you want to in this country, but you got to live with it. And I have not liked the hate campaign that I've seen. And I've not liked a lot that I've seen from both sides complaining about the other. And you've heard me complain about that a lot. So there you have it. I have not jumped on anybody's bandwagon. I didn't wait to see who was going to win and then get on it. I wouldn't do that. I've told you how I feel. It looks pretty doggone clear to me that Barack Obama is going to end up with the nomination, and that's just absolutely fine with me. I would be very proud to have Barack Obama as my president, and I would have been proud to have Hillary Clinton as my president as well. Maybe something will happen with either of them, either of them in the rest of this primary season that will cause me to change my mind about that. But I doubt it, because they're both honorable people, despite what you hear in the press. Frankly, I've personally had far more dealings with Hillary Clinton than I have with Barack Obama. But I don't think I've ever seen Barack Obama one time say anything really important that I cringed at or anything like that. He's a very fine, respectable, intelligent, well-spoken gentleman. And in every sense of the word, he's a gentleman. And he's a consummate politician as well. And more power to him if he gets the primary and becomes our candidate. So, once again, you ask, and I told you, maybe I'm too honest sometimes, but I'm just not going to sit here and lie to everybody and say, that's, wanted to let you know. And I really don't understand the hatred. And I could go on and on and on about it. In fact, I may in the second hour some things that people are saying about both of the candidates. I wonder, are a lot of you getting a lot of this racist stuff against Barack Obama? I just wonder if a lot of you are getting that. I've been getting some sort of a racist diatribe every single day from one source or another. Frankly, I'm getting a little tired of it. So, I don't know. We shall see. But I do get every day. You know what I think I'll start doing? I'm rambling here a little bit, but I think what I'll start doing is giving you the address of these people that I get this from every single day. Racist email. And I know where it's coming from, so we might as well identify it. And they're mentioned on the chat room, did you just hear a doorbell? Yes, you did. I had my cell phone set on a doorbell thing, forgot to shut it off today. Well, anyway, we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour, coming up in just a moment or two, and coming up in the second hour, we're going to have Representative Barbara Lee with us, so don't go away. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Roughly 40 NASA employees who all work on the same floor at a research center in Cleveland have been diagnosed with cancer. The union representing the workers is seeking answers. Jesse Russell reports.
According to the union representing workers at NASA's Glenn Research Center in Cleveland, at least 40 workers have been diagnosed with cancer on one floor. The workers are scientists who work on the third floor of the Development Engineering Building, and over the past 4 years, they have been diagnosed with multiple cases of cancer. NASA says tests at the research center have not turned up any carcinogens, but the Lewis Engineers and Scientists Association is demanding more tests to be done. Last month, the Ohio Department of Health and the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health said that cancer rates at the facility are within the average. According to the union, some of the diagnosed workers refused to answer the questionnaire sent around by the department because they didn't want to be identified. Roughly 100 employees work on the third floor, and the union represents more than 1,500 workers.
New York City's Carpenters Union expects a couple of thousand people at its annual apprenticeship contest and exhibit open house today. Martin Daly is director of training for the New York City District Council of Carpenters.
The Carpenters Union apprenticeship program is the largest apprenticeship program in New York State. It's 2,000 apprentices, and we train 4,000 journeymen every year here in our Labor Technical College. It's a benefit for everybody. It's a win-win situation across the board.
The California Labor Federation is releasing a new study today that it says shows that paid sick days benefits employers as well as workers. Nearly 6 million California workers, 1 in 6, have no paid sick days. The California Labor Federation says the new study from the Institute for Women's Policy Research shows tremendous benefits for employers when paid sick days are provided to workers. The study uses U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers to evaluate the impact on California employers if paid sick days are guaranteed by law to all the state's workers. The Healthy Families, Healthy Workplaces Act, before the state legislature there, would do just that. Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
Pending home sales hit a record low in February, falling 1.9%. Pending home sales are based on contracts signed during the month and serve as a measure of future home sales activity. Overall, pending home sales are down 21% over the same time last year.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
round up the usual suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. Now, he's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shears Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here, on the Horn, Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Play as time goes by.
Before we proceed,
give countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Oh, did you ever have one of those days? I'm having one of those weeks so far. Ah, yes, hump day is not working out so well for the Guy James Show. Such is live radio. Our first interview of the day, for whatever reason, we couldn't contact them. And we were just contacted during the news at the top of the hour by the folks at the Speaker's office at the Capitol building that Representative Barbara Lee will not be with us. They had set up the interview because they've called for several votes on the House floor right now, and she can't make it. So, in this allotted time that we have, we were supposed to have her on at 4:10. So, just talk amongst yourselves for about 15 minutes, all right? I don't have anything to say. I was going to talk to the Representative Barbara Lee during that time, and since she's not going to be here. Well, I don't want, you know, just go ahead and it is one of those days. I was talking before the top of the hour that I have been very, very upset at the hate campaign going on and the crap that goes on. I've been getting these racist emails every day, hardcore racist against Barack Obama, anti-Muslim, anti-black, you name it. It's anti-everything Barack Obama, and they're just sickening. Let me see if I can call one. I hate to got too many computers going here all at once in the studio, but let me find one of these things really quick here if I can. I usually read them and then delete them. I don't know why I bother I don't know why I bother reading them. Maybe I'll do that during the break. I'll try and look up one of them. I deleted a whole bunch of that kind of stuff yesterday. Let's see here. Well, anyway, I'll try and look one of those up during the next break. But I've been getting a lot of them, and I just wonder if any of you have been getting them as well. They're very prolific. I'm on a list of media people, and it's fascinating how many people are sending us around that Barack Obama is a closet Muslim, that he's a closet terrorist because of his Muslim ties. His father had a high-ranking position in Africa, and I forget which country anymore. it's just... it's unbelievable. And the anti-Hillary stuff. When's that going to get calmed down? I know you all know about this by now. I was going to talk about it yesterday, but since we weren't here yesterday, I didn't get a chance to. You heard, what's her name now on MSNBC, pretty much calling Hillary Clinton a liar again. And they went on, all the newscasts again and all the pundits. Oh, Hillary Clinton, she got up and she told this story about the hospital and the woman dying, and she's just a liar. Well, if you're Hillary Clinton and you hear this story, and many of you have heard this by now, but I'm going to play it again anyway. This guy's a deputy sheriff, and he's telling Hillary this story about someone. What do you do if you're Hillary Clinton and you're told this story? Do you not repeat it? Let's listen to it.
I'd like to tell you a story of a young woman I know that didn't have health insurance. She worked in a little pizza place around here, and she was pregnant, worked for some minimum wage. She went to the hospital, and the hospital told her she needed $100 up front, which she didn't have. Of course, didn't make a lot of money. So they had billed her a couple times for it. And after getting pregnant, she went back, like I say, went back again. They told her she needed $100 that she didn't have. And so they refused to see her because of she had a bill and stuff from being there before. So she went to another local hospital, and they seen her and stopped her her labor and told her to come back in 2 days. Well, before she got back, within those 2 days, her baby died. So the wife flighted her to a hospital in Columbus. And within 15 days, she died. And they come to find out that they had misdiagnosed what the problem was. And it was a smaller hospital, didn't have the need to take care of what she needed at that time. But her family and them think that if she had had good insurance and stuff and was taken care of at the first hospital, of course, that had the medical needs to take care of her, that her and her baby, of course, would still be here. And I just, I think that the health insurance thing really needs to be addressed and for people, that work for minimum wage and different things.
Well, I hear so many stories like that. People without insurance are more likely.
And so Hillary Clinton went out in the stump and repeated that story. Is that a great crime? Evidently, the guy didn't have all of his facts straight, but the story pretty well, damn well, true. And does anybody on the other side of the fence want to stand and tell me that that doesn't happen every day in this country? I looked up some statistics about it, showing how many people are likely to die in each state due to the lack of health coverage. And there's some eye-opening numbers for almost every state. And among some of the figures cited is the fact that more than 7 working-age Texans die each day due to the lack of health insurance. Did you know that the lack of health insurance is the 3rd leading cause of death in this country? Behind cancer and heart problems. The lack of insurance. Approximately 960 people in Illinois died in 2006 because they had no health insurance. And nearly 9,900 uninsured New Yorkers between the ages of 25 and 64 died in the years 2000 to 2006 because they had no health insurance. The lack of health coverage is, in fact, a matter of life and death to people in this country. And health insurance matters. And we had the Republican side of this. Bootstraps, all that. Pull yourself up. Pay for your own insurance. We don't care. We don't owe you anything. In 2002, the Institute of Medicine estimated that 18,000 adults nationwide died in 2000 because they did not have health insurance. The estimate was later updated by the Urban Institute that said it was at least 22,000 that died in 2006 because of the lack of health insurance. Think of a group of 22,000 people as a big basketball arena, full of people, full of life and cheering for their team, and all dead because they don't have life insurance, don't have health insurance. A recent academic study found that uninsured adults between the ages of 55 and 64 are even more likely to die prematurely. For this group, a lack of health insurance is the third leading cause of death following heart disease and cancer for the group between 55 and 64. Uninsured adults are 25% more likely to die prematurely than adults with private health insurance. So you can say what you want to about that story that Hillary Clinton told. She repeated a story that was told to her in good faith, on camera. And she ends up being called a terrible liar because of it. Well, I disagree. There are, obviously, from the report I just cited, thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of anecdotal stories just like it. But why the hate campaign? Somebody clue me in. The Daily Coast, the Democratic Underground, BuzzFlash, dozens of websites that I read are so anti-Hillary Clinton that you'd think they'd vote for Satan first. And it's uncalled for. It's a dirty world. Truly is a dirty world. Speaking of a dirty world, it was all this hubbub that went on here locally. I told you about the local radio host accusing me of threatening the president's life on the air one time and then having to back down and apologize on the air, and I played the apology for you and all that. And the results of what's going to happen at are still pending. But all of it was over the fact that Jane Fonda went on the View, I think it was, and used the C word when referring to women. Or part of their anatomy, at least. I'm getting graphic here for a moment. But that's what the whole thing was about. It's what started it, because this local host had said something to that effect on the air and how disgusted she was with Jane Fonda for referring to part of a woman's anatomy. She wasn't calling anybody that name, the C word. But this host, this conservative host, this McCain lover, was so disgusted by that, that Jane Fonda would say such a thing about the part of a woman's anatomy. Well, from the upcoming book, The Real McCain, by a guy I know very well, Cliff Schechter. I just talked to Cliff at the conference a couple of weeks ago. We find that in his 1992 Senate bid, John Sidney McCain was joined on the campaign trail by his wife, Cindy, as well as campaign aide Doug Cole and consultant Wes Gullett. And at one point, Cindy McCain playfully twirled McCain's hair and said, "You're getting a little thin up there." And John Sidney McCain's face reddened, and he responded, "At least I don't plaster on the makeup like a trollop, you." And he called her the C word. And then he said, "It's been a long day. That's why you said it." So, what kind of a guy is John McCain? I ask you, how many of you guys listening would call your wife that to her face in front of some witnesses? I don't think I know anybody. I hope that I've never known anybody that would. But that's the rap on John McCain, that he is got a pretty nasty personality. I'm assuming you all heard his speech in front of the VFW. Let's play some of his speech in front of the VFW.
As president, I will do everything in my power to ensure that those who serve today and those who have served in the past have access to the highest quality health, mental health, and rehabilitative care in the world. The disgrace of Walter Reed must not be forgotten. Neither should we accept a situation in which veterans are denied access to care due to great travel distances, backlogs of appointments, and years of pending disability evaluation and claims.
Let's stop that for a moment. John McCain spoke to the VFW in Kansas City. He spoke at length about the sacrifice paid by U.S. soldiers in Iraq, acknowledging how little had been asked of others compared to their service, and declaring that the nation owes veterans a debt that we can never fully repay. He also said that the veterans should have access to the highest quality health care in the world upon returning. And as president, he said, "I will do everything in my power to ensure that those who serve today and those who have served in the past have access to the highest quality health, mental health, and rehabilitative care in the world. The disgrace of Walter Reed must not be forgotten. Whatever our commitments to veterans cost, we will keep them, as you have kept every commitment to us. The honor of a great nation is at stake." John McCain said that, and so let's play this clip again.
As president, I will do everything in my power to ensure that those who serve today and those who have served in the past have access to the highest quality health, mental health, and rehabilitative care in the world. The disgrace of Walter Reed must not be forgotten. Neither should we accept a situation in which veterans are denied access to care due to great travel distances, backlogs of appointments, and years of pending disability evaluation and claims. I believe that we should give veterans the option to use a simple plastic card to receive timely and accessible care at a convenient location through a provider of their choosing. I will not stand for requiring veterans to make an appointment, to stand in line, to make an appointment, to stand in line for substandard care of the injuries you have suffered to keep our country safe.
So those are mighty big words, aren't they? John McCain says all that, how he honors all of our troops, he honors all their service, and he's voted against an amendment providing a $20 billion to the VA. He's voted against. I can name one after another that John McCain has voted against. So not the rosy picture that John McCain would have you believe. Right. Well, we'd like to welcome to the program now, after all of our trials and tribulations today. Rick Perlstein. Rick, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's good to be here. We had a little household emergency, but everything is well in hand now.
Well, we know all about household emergencies. We're
in a national emergency.
Yeah. I've got my... Okay, here we go. I'll put up the volume just a little bit here on your end. Wanted to talk to you today about John McCain. We were just talking about John McCain here on the program. His words sometimes are pretty doggone empty, and you wrote quite
a veteran before he was against him, I think.
that's certainly a good way of putting it. You wrote a really good piece in the Nation's magazine recently about it. And by the way, that was called "All Aboard the McCain Express." And all of you folks that don't see the Nation, you can go online and read this. What caused you to say all these things about John McCain?
Well, the piece is about how all the kind of professional conservatives, the guys who make their living kind of being conservative and claiming to be the voice of the conservative masses, spent all of summer and fall and most of winter talking about, like, this guy, like he was the devil, that he was absolutely a betrayal of American values. I said in my first sentence of the piece that back when the Republican presidential race was still competitive, the insults against John McCain from the leading conservative voices were so extravagant they almost constituted a new literary genre.
Oh.
Rush Limbaugh said he threatens the American way of life as we always known it. But then he won the nomination.
Have you ever seen a faster U-turn?
Yeah. Well, my favorite example was Michael Reagan, who is the son of the 40th president, and he was absolutely dripping with venom about McCain. He said he posited a huge gap, quote, that separates McCain, whose contempt for his fellow humans is patently obvious, and my dad, Ronald Reagan. He has contempt for conservatives who he thinks can be duped into thinking he's one of them. And he just absolutely thundered that he was not going to let himself be duped by John McCain for at least a week. Because 8 days later, he wrote an article in which he said, well, if my dad was around today, he would be campaigning for Reagan. he would be campaigning for McCain because, you know, that socialist Barack Obama and that true Hillary Clinton, you know, they're the real enemy.
Wasn't it Michael? I'm thinking it was Michael Reagan. Was it Michael Reagan that called him the new axis of evil or something like that?
That was in the same magazine. That was Human Events. That was an unbelievable thing. Yeah. The states that were the new axis of evil were the states whose primary voters voted for McCain. You see, these professional conservatives have a big problem. McCain shows how weak and how ineffectual they are. Basically, they told all the Republican rank and file not to vote for him. But none of them listened. They voted for him anyway. So basically, all through the 80s and 90s, the folks like Rush Limbaugh have been seeing themselves as the power brokers. No one gets past a Republican primary without kissing our rings first. But McCain, you know, kind of called their bluff. He showed that the emperor had no clothes. And he managed to get the nomination without these guys. And that puts them in a terrible spot. It basically means they have no mojo left. They have nothing left to go to future candidates and say, you know, do what we want, do what we say, so they can just say, well, why should I? McCain didn't, and look what happened to him. He ended up just fine. So and they're in a double bind because their power rests on the Republican Party staying in power, so they have to figure out some way to make their peace with McCain, and that's resulted in some rather hilarious contortions as well.
Oh, some absolutely hilarious contortions. To define for our audience, will you, Rick, you mentioned professional Republicans. What do you mean by that, and how they've gotten this to the point where they expect their rings to be kissed?
Professional conservatives.
Okay.
Basically, what they say is they come up with this absolutely false theory that there's this lockstep, seething mass of conservatives out there that only they understand and only they control. Some of them are radio hosts like Rush Limbaugh. Some are preachers like Dobson. Some are kind of organizers and direct mail folks like Richard Viguerie. And they say, look what happened when George H.W. Bush betrayed the conservatives in 1992. He lost the presidency. Now, the theory is absurd. I mean, he lost the presidency because Ross Perot ran and for all kinds of reasons. But they've been basically, you know, they've been basically working this bluff for years and years and years and years and years. And the reason I call them professional conservatives are they're basically like ward bosses. They're basically people whose power rests on the perception that they control of destiny of the Republican Party. And that's what they do for a living. You know, that's their job. I mean, I had one organizer in California, Sal Russo, who was one of the guys who put together the recall campaign against Gray Davis in California in 2003, say he considered radio hosts his ward bosses. You know, I mean, this is basically a hustle. This is a racket. This is their business. And they're screwed. John McCain absolutely unravels their entire business model.
I can tell. My audience knows I don't often listen to Rush Limbaugh, but now and then, you know, we hear a cut here and a cut there. He's flummoxed by this whole thing. You can just tell that he is. And he being the king of all the ones that want their ring kissed, McCain has totally bypassed him, hasn't he?
Totally bypassed him. Totally bypassed Dobson. And they have to come up with these crazy excuses. Back in the day, they had to come up for excuses why McCain was unacceptable. They can't say McCain is unacceptable, McCain is going to ruin the nation because he refused to come to my dinner parties. You know?
No.
Reverend Dobson said that McCain was unacceptable because he uses foul language.
Do you know something I know? Is Dobson actually a reverend now?
I think he's a reverend, but his training is in psychology.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that he was ever actually ordained.
That may in fact be the case. These guys are these guys are a pretty impressive bunch of hustlers. But you know, Rush Limbaugh, 1994, you know, he basically was able to claim credit for the Republicans taking over Congress. They made him an honorary member of the freshman class. You know, National Review put him on the cover as the leader of the opposition. And he's bupkis now. He's nothing, you know. And it's pretty. I almost feel pity for someone like Rush Limbaugh, but you know, not too much because he can always go back to the pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, and he can still cash his $35 million a year paycheck as well.
When he renegotiates, maybe it's only going to be $25 million because a lot of that $35 million comes from the perception that he actually has all this political power, and he actually can get all these politicians to basically sing from his song sheet.
Well, I wish I could take a $10 million cut in my pay. I bet you do too. Even people like arch conservative, I think, at least in his own mind, Rick Santorum. I was surprised to read some of the stuff he wrote about Rick Santorum and his absolute vehemence against McCain.
Oh, that was a great story. A friend of mine, his name is Mike Lux, and he wrote about it in his blog, Open Left, was taking the train from New York to Washington, and he hears some guy barking into his cell phone about how evil McCain was and how McCain was going to destroy the Republican Party and how McCain had to be stopped, and he was begging some guy to go public with some story about how McCain lost his temper and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and he's like, who is this guy? And he turns around, and it's the former senator, Santorum from Pennsylvania. And this goes to show how arrogant these people are. They live in this bubble, and the whole world revolves around him. My friend Mike said, oh, Senator Santorum, my name is Mike Lux. I'm a Democratic activist. Interesting what you're saying, da-da-da. Struck up a conversation. Conversation ends. And Santorum still goes back to his phone calls, not even caring. You know, like the whole train is listening to him.
Wow.
But the thing about it is, now Santorum has to figure out some way to get back in bed with him. And that's what all these guys, that's the dilemma that all these guys face. And that's why once our guys, Taylor and Obama, stop, you know, cutting each other down, we're just going to be able to eviscerate McCain. And the sooner the better.
Don't you think, I was going to make the statement, and make it right now. I think that McCain's at his zenith right now in popularity.
Absolutely.
I think that once we pick our candidate, whichever one of them it is, I think you're going to see immediately there's going to be a big spread.
Because, you know, that's what happened. Every time he campaigned in a state, you know, his popularity went down. the more people see McCain, the less they like him. And, you know, now that, you know, there's more and more scrutiny on him, we learn that he does have a terrible temper. He's the guy who blows a gasket. He's the guy who says something and tries to take it back. And then he's so used to being cosseted by the mainstream media people who, for some reason, he's managed to make worship them. But this stuff about him wanting to stay in Iraq for 100 years is just pinning him into a corner. And now, did you see the latest, his TV commercial in which they misspell his name?
No, I hadn't seen that.
Oh, this is great. Check that out. There's a commercial. Let me see if I can dig it up for you, in which it says, paid for by JOHM, J-O-H-M, McCain for president.
He'll blow a gasket on that.
And one guy has a theory that, well, maybe it's a setup. Maybe they did it on purpose so they can say, when they say call Obama Osama, they can say, well, it's so easy to get one letter wrong.
That's right. And you know, I was just mentioning before you called in today, I'm assuming you know Cliff Schechter, don't you?
Absolutely.
He was at the conference.
He's blogging at ourfuture.org.
Yeah, and Cliff was at the conference there a couple of weeks ago. I'm sure you talked to him there, and I did as well. I guess that's been, 3 weeks now? Maybe four. I can't keep up with time anymore. Anyway, did you read a story about Cliff?
He's had a bunch of stories. Cliff Schechter has a new book, and I'm glad to promote it. It just came out a couple of days ago. It's called The Real McCain. We're trying to make it a bestseller. It's on Amazon, and every day they're coming out with a new story from the book.
We mentioned the one about calling his wife the C word. I don't know.
That, he called her a trollop, which no one at the age of 347 has ever used.
Do you know anybody?
You know why he blew a gasket? You remember?
Because
he said he was going bald.
Yeah. I can't imagine calling your wife that, you know? That's the thing. It's not that a lot of them are his fellow senators. It's not that they're so much against his policies. They just can't stand him personally.
Yeah. And then the latest story is that he got in a fist fight with one of these guys.
Hmm. Well.
Rick Renzi from Texas.
Oh, yeah, Renzi. And, which one of them said that he wasn't fit, that it scared him to death, him being in the White House?
Yes, that was Thad Cochran, who's one of his colleagues from Mississippi. He said, the thought of John McCain as president sends chills down my spine. And Cochran's kind of a southern gentleman. He doesn't come out with stuff like that very often. It was a very unusual thing.
Well, I'm sure somebody's spoken to him since. I haven't heard him say anything about it since. But I urge everybody to read this article in The Nation. It's very, very interesting. And there's a lot coming out about John McCain right now. We had Paul Waldman on recently. Him and David, Brock wrote that book, Free Ride, about McCain. And I don't think the public had any idea about a lot of this John McCain stuff that's coming out now.
Yeah, and I think we're in good position.
I think so, too. The conference this year, Rick, was absolutely fantastic. I know Robert thought it had gone well, particularly because they didn't have the big name this year, didn't have the presidential candidates there, but man, there was a supercharged attitude going on there.
Not having the presidential candidates just goes to show that what this is all about, ultimately, it's not a top-down kind of thing. It's a bottom-up kind of thing. It's a movement, and we're the ones who are driving the candidates instead of the other way around. And the stronger the progressive movement gets, the more organized, the more people we have like Cliff Schechter and Paul Waldman and David Brock, who are kind of creating these kind of narratives and stories and creating these kinds of grassroots pressure from below, the more the candidates are going to be listening to us, the more the Democratic president is going to listen to us. And that really ended up being the theme of the conference, that nothing happens without a movement. And that's what the progressives are doing. We're building a movement. Never again will we get nonsense like NAFTA and all these, you know, kind of sellout centrist Democrats, so long as liberals and progressives kind of read from the same song sheet, are talking about the same stuff, are building up an independent power base. And that's what the Campaign for America's Future is going to be all about in 2009, hopefully with a Democrat in the White House.
Oh, it's going to be a Democrat in the White House. I have no doubts about it. I am just as sure as can be what I said a few minutes ago is true. The minute we select our candidate, there's going to be a spread take place, and it'll continue to widen. I'm absolutely sure of it. Rick, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. I urge everybody to go to The Nation and read this very fine article. It's called All Aboard the McCain Express. And of course, you hit the OurFuture.org site quite often, too, don't you?
Every day.
Every day. So you can find Rick's writings there and in The Nation now and then. Rick, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Rick Perlstein, this is a great article in The Nation. Take the time to log on and read it. It's at thenation.com, and it's called All Aboard the McCain Express. And what you don't know about John McCain, when you do find out, it'll open your eyes. This guy's a pretender. This guy is a real pretender. And I do believe, and I'm not kidding when I say that, you've heard me express confidence, no matter which one of our candidates, and out of the whole gang of them that ran, practically, no matter which one of them gets the nod, that's why I'm not accepting this thing that the press and the media is driving right now about, oh my God, the party's being torn apart and all that. I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it at all. Because I know damn well, write it down that I said so, the minute we select our candidate, John McCain is finished. Finished, I tell you. Finished. He will not come close. Will not come close. It's certainly looking more and more all the time like it is going to be Barack Obama. I'd say the odds are probably pretty well stacked in his favor right now. And let's face it, could you get a much more attractive candidate than Barack Obama? Certainly not. So, you see the resignation in the Republicans. You see it. Some of Charlie Black, all of them that are usually out there. I mean, they're out there saying their words that they normally say. But you can tell. Newt Gingrich, I saw him recently. You can just tell that conviction that they're going to win this race is not there. It's not there. They know they will not win this election. They know that right now. Believe me, they know it. And truth be told, I think John McCain probably knows it as well. That's the way it's going to be. He's not going to do it this year. Let's see. Where are we going with this? We're going to hear a couple of words from Georgie Bush, and then we'll be right back.
And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. This week I visited the country of Romania for a NATO summit meeting. Romania was the latest addition to the NATO groups, and they have brought strengths to the table since they joined. Their mob of villagers with its powerful pitchforks and torches has been a valuable part of NATO's anti-monster and castle-storming goals. The army has burned 8 Frankenstein's monsters this past year and 5 werewolves. Now, some may ask, what about mummies? And that's a concern I address with NATO, and they're working with the Catholic Church to consecrate their anti-mummy firepower. There were, however, setbacks at the summit meeting. While in Romania, I was unfortunately bitten on the neck by a vampire and initiated into their undead world. Now, although the vampires are a deadly adversary in the war on terror, becoming one myself will help me understand their mind and predict their attacks. There are many upsides to being a vampire. One is that I no longer require sleep. I can work 24/7 now to put forth my vision for America. I can also now bite anyone and make them my thrall. And I'm also immortal. And therefore, so long as I have just a few minutes alone with each future president, I can remain a valuable advisor for America for years to come. Oh, and on an unrelated note, I urge the Congress to pass the anti-garlic, anti-wooden stake legislation I recently proposed. Thank you for listening. God bless you.
There's something in your eyes. Is everything alright? You
You look up to the sky, you long for something more. Darling, give me your right hand. I think I understand. Follow me and you will never have to wish again. I know that after tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 no. I know at the end of tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. And I know if the love is alright, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 no. I know. But again, tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 no. Tell me how you feel. And if I'm getting here, I'll tell you where to steer. You tell me where to steer. Da-da-da, darling. Way above the clouds and high above the stars, through the unknown black holes, no one knows where we are. But we'll return to Earth and do it all over again. Cause I know that after tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. But again, that tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. And I know if the love is alright, you don't have to look about the stars. No, 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 I know. But again, that's at night, you don't have to look about the stars. But come away with me. Come fly away with me. Just for one night, no one will ever know. No, 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 darling. I will leave you satisfied forever past time. You don't have to hide, you're free to fly. I know that after tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. By the end of tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. And I know if the love is alright, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. By the end of tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. I know that after tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. By the end of tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. And I know if the love is alright, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. But again, that tonight, I've been looking down upon it from heaven. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, no. Oh, na, na, na.
Suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. Now, he's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shears' Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here, on the Horn, Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shears.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Hey, as time goes by, you've got about 12 and a half minutes yet to call the Guy James Show here at 866-546-5254. I am more than a little bit upset with the press and the media right now, and I know many of you are as well. And I saw a Nexus search that was done We've had how many killed in Iraq this past week, just since Sunday? Quite a few. We passed that 4,000 mark last week, and I think it's up to 4,027 today, something like that. We've got our guys and gals dying right and left over there, one attack after another. And, of course, we've got Petraeus and Crocker here giving us a crock at these hearings, telling us of all this great progress which we're making in Iraq, when we know such is not the case. Okay, maybe some progress. Maybe you've had a 100% that you needed, and you've made 0.5% so far. Great. But the thing I'm getting at here, the press letting us down, doing a nexus search over this. How much have you heard about the events that are taking place in Iraq the past week or two? How much have you heard about it? How much footage have you seen of it on TV? With this nexus search, we've had you and the torture memo mentioned 102 times. Over the past 30 days, we're talking here. Mukasey and 9/11, 73 times. You and the Fourth Amendment, 16 times. Obama and Bowling, 1,043 times. That is Obama and Bowling for 1,043 times. Obama and his minister, 3,000 times. Obama and patriotism, his lack of it, according to the press, 1,600 times. And Clinton and Lewinsky, 1,079 times. And we've been in Iraq for over 5 years. There's no end in sight. And this whole mess, this whole quagmire, this whole cesspool in Iraq has been completely written out of the media for this crap. And now we've got, well, the Clintons are rich. They're worth $109 million. So what? Compared to the life of one of those soldiers. Oh. It drives me crazy. It just drives me crazy. At least, what's her name? See, it's been so long since she's been in the news, I can't even think of her name now. That little singer, whatever, you know, that shaved her head. That's all I remember. Anyway, as long as people are fighting and dying in Iraq, as long as they're following orders from this spurious commander-in-chief, shouldn't the press be covering that? Shouldn't they have people over there? I guess it's easier just to walk around Washington, D.C. and take a camera with you and it's in New York City, and it's just easier to do it that way. And after all, let's not cover the real news. No. Let's just do what's the easiest. I spoke to Juan Cole, and a lot of you know Juan Cole. He teaches up at the University of Michigan. We go at each other on that. But Juan's been on the show many times. And wanted to have him on, but he's teaching, unfortunately, this week during this time slot. And he couldn't appear with us this week. But he was talking about how the U.S. and wrote about how the U.S. press went crazy for this report that al-Sadr said he would dissolve the militia if the Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani ordered him to do it. Well, folks, he always says that when there's a controversy. And he said the same thing in the spring of 2004, says Juan. He says it because he knows it makes him look reasonable to the Shiite public. He says it because he knows that the Grand Ayatollahs are not going to touch the matter with a 10-foot pole. They're not so foolish as to take responsibility for dissolving a militia that they had nothing to do with creating, and that is probably the real meaning of the CNN report that they refused when asked. I doubt the Grand Ayatollahs in Najaf actively commanded Muqtada to keep his militia. They just declined to get drawn in. So one writes, the idea that having lost militarily, al-Maliki and his political allies, who are a minority in parliament now, could just a couple of days later jawbone Muqtada al-Sadr into giving up his parliamentary parliament was absurd. Now, Juan Cole's an expert on this area. Juan knows the facts. Juan's got people that he talks to on the ground there. He knows what is happening here. We hear this from independent people. Why doesn't Ambassador Crocker and General Petraeus know these things? I don't want to come across as the expert on this, but when we talk to people every day, like Professor Cole, and like many other guests we've had on this program who are on the ground in Baghdad and Basra, and know what's happening and report what is actually happening up to the minute, what is it that keeps Petraeus and Crocker from telling us the truth about this? Well, we know what that is, don't we? And it's George W. Bush. And again, no slight toward the military implied. I mean this personally toward Petraeus. Petraeus shouldn't be telling us what our policy in Iraq is. He should be following orders, that's all. He should not be making policy in Iraq. The Joint Chiefs are there for that. The Commander-in-Chief is there for that. And he should not be putting all of this on Petraeus and having Petraeus tell the American people what our policy in Iraq is going to be. That simply is not how the relationship between the executive office and the military is supposed to be. Totally bypassing the legislative branch, by the way. It makes us look like we have a general that's running our foreign policy in Iraq. And I believe that is the case. It doesn't just look that way. That is what is happening, and it is wrong. It's constitutionally wrong for that to happen in this country. We are not a military dictatorship. We do not have the military make foreign policy for this country. You never hear the Joint Chiefs of Staff mentioned. You never hear that they've convened and talked about this. It's always nothing but Petraeus. Petraeus, Petraeus. I would prefer to hear what the Joint Chiefs have to say about this. And I think we know what the Joint Chiefs have to say about this, don't we? But they're getting bypassed in favor of one general who happens to march to the drumbeat of whatever drumbeat George Bush happens to make. And that is not an anti-military statement. That is a statement of just how wrong this administration is and how well they have misled the American public. There are a lot of countries around the world with guys on their stars on their shoulders that are running the country. It's never turned out very well. I'm sure General Petraeus is a fine soldier and has been. He's had a distinguished career. I also believe that he's been suckered into something, he's become a political symbol. And that's just not the way it should be. Not in this country. Oh, my. Well, we've got many things that we didn't get a chance to cover today that we'll talk about tomorrow. That's one thing about a talk show. There's always talk left for tomorrow. We want to talk some more about John McCain tomorrow. We'll have a lot to say about John McCain from here on out. I feel that the press has not come close to doing their job in reporting the truth to you about John McCain. We know a lot about his political policies and his votes and so forth. He is not the liberal that they paint him to be, those that hate him on the conservative side. He's got something like a 88% voting record, conservative. That's not very liberal to me. But it's his attitude, and it's his temper, and his demeanor that leaves a whole hell of a lot to be desired. And I'm not sure the public knows about it, and I'm not sure the public would entrust such a man with the keys to the kingdom. I know they will not want to once they know all about John McCain. And we will make sure on this program that at least our listeners know all about John McCain. We will leave no stone unturned that we know of about John McCain. Well, I do want to thank you for being with us today here on the program. Always a pleasure for me. I do want you to remember that it is a listener-supported program, and we could certainly, just the same as a lot of liberal causes, use your help right now. It's not free to keep things going, and we hope you appreciate that fact. And thanks to everybody who does help support the program. We appreciate it very much. Hey, you're listening to The Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network, Billy Shears, music director. Stay tuned for Mark Levine's program, Always Great. Mark is as good as it gets, so stay tuned for that. You're listening to The Guy James Show. Don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang. Have a good one.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. If you saw some of the testimony of General Petraeus yesterday, you saw a lot of frustration on the faces of the senators. Mostly the Democrats, but even some Republicans, too, were, let's just say, frustrated by General Petraeus's failure to give any kind of real answer. When will the troops leave? Well, I don't know. Guess it depends on conditions. Are we succeeding? Oh, absolutely we're succeeding. What are we succeeding in doing? Well, it's kind of hard to say. If you go through the history of this conflict, of course, you see at the beginning the enemy apparently was Saddam Hussein. George Bush intimated that Saddam Hussein had worked with al-Qaeda. That didn't turn out to be true. And that he had weapons of mass destruction. That didn't turn out to be true. But the goal was to remove Saddam Hussein, who was a bad man, and then, no, the enemy was al-Qaeda in Iraq. And now we have a new enemy, Iran, apparently aiding Shia militias. When will it ever end? Who are the players? And what do Iraqis think of all of this? Well, to answer these questions, I've invited a really terrific guest. His name is Ra'ed Jarar. He is the Iraqi consultant for the American Friends Services Committee. Ra'ed, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Having me. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Thank you very much for coming. Let me start just by getting a little bit of your history here. You were born in Iraq?
Yeah, I was born in Baghdad, and I spent most of my life there.
How were you there up into and including the American occupation, or did you leave before then?
I was there before and during and after the initial invasion in 2003, and I left after that. I moved to the U.S. in 2005.
So you're one of the 2 million Iraqi refugees from the country.
Yeah, I guess I'm one of the. Yeah, I mean now the number is more 2.5 million Iraqis who were forced to leave their country.
2.5 million. Now,
and
you were from Baghdad then. You're from Baghdad?
Yeah, I'm originally from Baghdad. My mother is from the south, so she's from Hilda.
And pardon me for asking this, but it does seem to matter in the context of the Iraqi debate and factions today, but are you Shia or Sunni or some mixture?
Yeah, I mean, you know, these questions are very new to Iraqis because people never thought about these things before 2003. I'm actually half Sunni and half Shiite.